Small Biz America.
This is Small Biz Spotlight, featuring up-close interviews with small business leaders and entrepreneurs across America. And now, here's your host, David Wolf.
Our guest on this edition has created a unique organization that embodies his own artistry, creativity, and unique gifts and abilities to communicate and inspire children and adults to get in touch with their own creativity. New York jazz saxophonist Hayes Greenfield has been a part of the New York scene since the late 70s. He studied and performed with the late great pianist Jackie Byard and has created enduring associations with other such notables as Richie Havens, Ornette Coleman, Herbie Hancock, Joe Lovano, Dave Liebman, Rashid Ali, Barry Outshall, and Paul Blay. Today, he's the founder of Jazzmataz. This is a music education program that he founded just about a decade ago. Hayes takes students, parents, teachers, and educators completely by surprise using the fundamentals of jazz music. Today, Jazzmataz reaches more than 25,000 people a year, largely from within the New York metro area. Joining us on the line from New York City is award-winning saxophonist Hayes Greenfield. He's the founder of Jazzmataz. Hayes, welcome to the program.
Hi, David. Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. When did you first discover your own ability and your own desire to communicate with children and even adults, teaching the way you do now?
I would say probably about 1995. I was mentoring kids who'd been incarcerated, who were turning their lives around, and I was also volunteering and teaching at a youth organization in New York City called The Door. And we had an ensemble, and I started running a program there at The Door that was about that was being funded by the Gap. It was an entrepreneurship program where I was teaching these kids how to use computers and create electronics and do their own music.
Now, did The Door naturally lead to what became Jazzmataz in terms of your development, or how did the Jazzmataz project first come about?
I had first done a song called For the Children, which was about the problems kids were dealing with violence and abuse back in 93, mm-hmm. and Richie Havens sang the song for me, and I made a music video, and worked with four different community youth organizations to help shoot, write, and edit the video. And it was pointing to community programs and adult intervention as a way to really positively affect young people. And then I was working with a guy named Steve Shames, who's a photojournalist, who had documented kids in poverty, and then was also was working on a book called Pursuing the Dream, which was documenting programs around the country that were all really stellar programs, kind of cutting edge, and working with kids and families. And so the whole thing really kind of grew out of how to support his work on a certain level. Not support his work, but I wanted to make a CD of major artists doing children's tunes that would be able to support an initiative that was to educate people around the country that we didn't have to reinvent the wheel, that there were a lot of really great programs out there that were working.
Mm.
And I started doing this at a time when there was a lot of benefit concerts that were finding out that the money wasn't really getting to the organizations that were putting them on often. And none of the artists really wanted to participate. And then I ended up just going ahead and doing it on my own. I decided to make a children's CD. And also, one of the things that was always upsetting to me is that, you know, you go into jazz clubs or jazz festivals, and the age of the people that were attending were getting older and older, and you see the hairlines receding more and getting grayer and grayer.
Yeah.
You know, and you realize that the audience for jazz was getting smaller and smaller. So I thought, well, why not make a children's jazz CD? And I kind of borrowed a concept from Roy Lichtenstein that was, you know, taking familiar material, i.e. children's tunes that we all knew, and jazzing them up. And Roy loved the idea. He was actually my saxophone student, and Roy and Dorothy helped produce my first Jazzmataz CD.
Wow. The program itself takes the fundamentals of jazz and invites participants to engage in a whole variety of activities. What kinds of skills are kids and adults learning from jazz that's not necessarily limited to music, per se?
Well, you know, jazz is a medium that draws on a lot of aspects. First of all, it's about active listening. When you're playing music, you have to actively listen. You know, you can't play good music without listening. And second of all, it's about group cooperation, and yet it inspires personal expression, where you have, you know, you take an ensemble of, let's say, four players, piano, bass, drum, and saxophone. So you'll have, each person has a certain role to play, and a function is what they're doing. The piano will be playing the harmony, the bass will be playing the lower part of the chords or the roots, the drummer will be keeping time, and the saxophone will be playing a melody. And then it becomes time where everybody can improvise, and you don't, after you make the statement as a melody or the theme, you follow the form of the form of the song, but you have your own ability to put your to make your own personal statement while other musicians are supporting you as you go about doing it. So it's even in, I mean, businesses are using jazz as a model for a work environment, which is really, you know, about group cooperation, really listening, and also as you grow as a jazz artist. I mean, one of the things that you always want to be doing is kind of like trying something new or reinventing yourself or looking at a line in many different ways. So you're always trying to push the envelope with your creativity, but all within kind of like a certain construction or a form that it's related to. So it's becomes a metaphor for a lot of different environments that you can grow from. I mean, I went and saw a lecture recently of a gentleman doing a lecture at a Columbia Presbyterian Medical Center, where he was using jazz as a way to inspire doctors to listen to their patients more.
Yes.
You know, and demonstrating it with a solo, with a Miles Davis solo.
Wow.
So it was really, jazz becomes a metaphor that can be used in a lot of different environments that, you know, if it's broken down properly and portrayed in a way that that non-musicians can grasp a sense of the language, it becomes a wonderful tool to use to inspire more creative thinking and active listening. You know, even the whole essence of call and response, and how that in relates to ensemble members talking to each other with sound.
Absolutely.
You know, or, for example, if one person's role changes, for example, you know, let's say the drummer chooses to play more colors as opposed to time, that means that the bass then will probably take over more of being the anchor of time. And in a certain sense, that might relate to a business environment where if somebody's not in for a specific time, for an illness or whatever, somebody else has to fill that hole. And it's almost like you become much more knowledgeable and be able to go outside your own specific job title or whatever and interrelate more clearly with others.
Yeah, absolutely. It's applicable to any organizational model. There's no question that rather than feeling resentful because the drummer decided to stop playing time, hey, you can jump in and be that anchor. And in an organization, yeah, if somebody doesn't show up, it absolutely applies. You can jump in and feel like it's part of a flow of energy rather than something you need to be harbor resentment about.
But more than harbor resentment, instead of that, that's almost like the negative aspect.
That's true.
The aspect of somebody saying, "Well, if you're open, if you have a group of people who are really their whole goal is to be there." Like Art Blakey said, his job as the drummer was to make the soloist sound the best that they can, and to envelop the warmth on the bandstand. That instead of the ego be about resentment, what about the ego be about, well, how do we, our communal goals are to be the best that we can together, how can we help each other? You know, if somebody has insight into something else, why does that have to necessarily mean that they're usurping somebody else's territory?
Absolutely. And my introduction, so you know, of the word resentment, which is clearly dark and negative, only to emphasize that this has to be, this is the way it works. It's a positive exchange of energy relating to a common goal.
So, yeah, which, you know, if you get down and you think about jazz, I mean, the whole point of jazz is to be, I mean, you know, if it's not going to be fun, if you're not going to be relating to each other and I mean, your goal in terms of performing with each other is to be seamless. You have a job where you're taking people on a journey who are listening. And, you know, the bandstand becomes a very sacred environment, regardless of whatever personal problems anybody may have with each other on the bandstand. You know, no one is to ever know, and it's seamless.
We're visiting with Hayes Greenfield. He's the founder of Jazz and Mataz, that website, www.jazzamataz, that's JazzAmataz.com. I wanted to dig in a little bit about, what does it feel like to be in one of these sessions with you? I imagine that they vary quite a bit, depending on age and range and where the school might be located, et cetera. But in general, what does that process look like? How do you approach walking into a room full of students? And these are music students, so it is a musical context that you're doing this. A lot more happens than around music, as we've established here. But what is that experience? What does that session look like?
Well, you know, when I go into all different kinds of schools and all different kinds of environments, from general ed, elementary, middle school, high school, to special ed, all different kinds of special ed, with kids with emotional problems, with mm-hmm. learning difficulties, with physical handicaps, the whole gamut. And what I do is, oh, it's just so much fun. It's to get them to, you know, it's to get them to be open and to experience the creative process in a way that's filled with fun and joy and very interactive. And I immediately get them speaking to me and doing a call and response. And I talk to them about jazz and what is jazz, and I break it down in a certain way. I relate it to food, and everybody laughs. I use humor as a way to disarm their, you know, kids who think jazz, you know, it's like, I am not doing a lecture demonstration with jazz. That's not at all what I'm about. I'm about sharing the joys and the magic of jazz and the personalities of jazz that inspired me as a kid, you know. And it's with humor, you can really, you know, it starts to open up all of the just receptors, you know. I relate it to food as there's all different kinds of food, some that you love, some that you know, you don't just tolerate, you know, it's good for your body, and some that you just, you know, don't want to even be at the table with. And that's the same as jazz, because jazz is a very broad category. Jazz encompasses, you know, all the different types of music from the late 1800s to, you know, now. In terms of jazz, that's the very broad spectrum of styles of music.
Yes.
You got swing and big band and Latin and jazz rock and fusion and stride piano and boogie-woogie and blues. I mean, you got avant-garde, you have free, you have all these different styles. And, you know, some people sometimes think, oh, man, you know, they hear, you know, that they might be reading in a paper somewhere, and they hear Cecil Taylor, who happens to be, you know, a spectacular avant-garde pianist, is this great jazz pianist, and may have never had any exposure to this, which is pretty abstract music, and go to hear it and be completely turned off, and because they're not ready for it, and then say, oh, well, I don't like jazz. Yet, had they gone and heard Herbie Hancock, they might have said, whoa, this is amazing. You know?
Yeah.
From there on, it's, you know, I play something crazy and really ridiculous and discordant, and I stop the band and I ask the audience, you know, what was wrong with that? And inevitably they'll say, it doesn't sound like anybody's playing together. And then from there it's like we discuss, well, what is tempo? So what I'm trying to do and what I'm doing with these kids is I'm actively getting them learning stuff, even subliminally, that when at the end of the show you do a recap as to what have we accomplished. You know, what's it called when you're plucking the bass? You know, well, it's called pizzicato. What is it called when a bass player plays with the bow? It's called arco. What is improvisation? Who makes things up? You know, what is tempo? What is a melody? Why does somebody recognize the Flintstones theme? It's not because they heard it on TV. It's because they understand the melody, the theme of the way the song goes. You know, what is it like I do a call and response? What are dynamics in terms of loud, you know, soft, pianissimo, mezzo forte, forte? And I get the kids doing this and scatting. And what is scatting? Scatting is just silly syllables. So when you forget the lyrics of the song, you know you can always scat. And scatting is just what I do with my instrument. It's just my vocal sounds on an instrument. And what's interesting is that adults love it. I mean, you know, I've had drummers like show talk about their instruments and why a snare drum is called a snare drum. And people have never this is, I don't know if you can hear the
yeah, the sounds of New York, absolutely.
You know, the snare drum, it's like people don't realize that the snares, why does the snare drum make the sound of the timbre, the color of that sound?
Sure.
With that little lever that you put the little wires on the bottom of the snare, you know, the drum. And I've had people come out, like adults come up to me after gigs and just say, man, that was like so informative. I had no idea.
The work you're doing, I mean, when you go into these schools and these environments with adults and what have you, you're augmenting a music program or an arts program in, let's say, a middle or a high school that's sorely missing something. What, do you have a sense about what the missing part there, and do you see light bulbs go on in a different way than they do every day in their classes? What is that like for you? Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, for example, I do a lot of, when I go into schools and what I'm finding, and this is very interesting, is like a lot of music teachers come from band or orchestral type of environments, and we're never jazz players, but want to get their kids improvising and really don't know how. And in the musical things, there may be some notes and on pieces of paper, so they have the kids playing those notes.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I would do is I go in and I get these kids to improvise. And I'll go to a school and, you know, oftentimes there's not a music program like there used to be, or the music teacher's there maybe once a week, or, you know, or there is a band program. For example, this past week I did a school and I had like 12, it was an elementary school, and I had their fifth graders, and I had 12 or 14 of these kids up on the bandstand who I got there. And they spent 15 minutes with me before the performance. They learned one tune, which was I had sent them prior to going, which was the tune that I close all my shows with, called The Pied Piper. But there's another tune that I do that's on a riff, and I get kids to improvise. And I'm working with the kids prior to the performance. And, you know, I ask how many kids like to improvise. And, of course, there's usually one or two or three that are type A that are like, you know, you point them in the direction, you say blow, and they just can't wait to blow.
You know? Yeah.
Those are the kids that I just say, okay, those guys are already on their way. I'm very interested in the kids that, when I ask who doesn't like to improvise and those kids put up their hands, those are the kids that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
So on this gig, Before the performance, this one little girl kind of turned away. She didn't even put her hand up. She just turned away so I couldn't see her, thinking that maybe I would miss her. So, you know, we did a quick run-through beginning, and I was explaining to them, if you wanted to use the B-flat scale, it's just like talking, improvising. It's just like talking. You don't just talk in a monotone, very, you know, blah, 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 blah. You speak with different levels and different speeds and words, depending on what you want to say. So, and that's like a solo, and it's just manipulating the sound. It's just, it's really about rhythm. It's about the quality of sound, rhythm, and then the choice of notes. The choice of notes is last to worry about, which nobody thinks of. They think that the choice of notes has got to be first. So I get up, and we play the first show, and the kids are kind of, I understood from the teacher afterwards, were very nervous about coming up. And they kept asking, when are we going up? Kind of very timid about coming up. And I call up this one little the flute player to play, and, you know, she like kind of comes up and finally plays and blows a little bit, and I said that was great. And I stopped the band, and I stopped, and I discussed with the audience there that she, like, had turned her back, thinking that I wasn't going to notice her. And she agreed, and that's why she did it, you know. And then I said, well, how did it feel to come up and take, you know, a solo? And to take the risk. And she said, it was good. Mm. But she was saying this in front of the whole crowd. So everybody knows then that it's like what we do in terms of challenging ourselves and taking positive risks and making the leap. So, and then there was another girl who came up who says, "Oh, I can't do this." And I, whenever I hear the word "can't" in a school, I stop and I say, you know, because you know, whenever that's just so closed, you know. And so she played, and lo and behold, the next set, the teacher told me the kids couldn't wait to come up and play because we did two shows that day.
Beautiful.
The girl who said "I can't" comes running up to the mic and says, "I want to try." And it's like everybody's a winner.
This is, it's transformational.
It is. And it's like, you know, it happens. I can't tell you. I mean, I did a school 2 weeks ago where this kid came up to scat, because I break it down with the scatting, where we become the drums, we become the bass, we put them together, we become a rhythm section, you know, boom, 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 boom. And then I get kids being, you know, trumpets and, you know, taking scat solos. And this kid comes up and takes a solo. Unbelievable scat solo. And the teacher comes up to me afterwards and says, you know, he's in the school play, and he came up to me afterwards and he said, "Now I'm not at all scared to go up on stage."
Wow.
So it does, it transforms these kids, and music is, you know, is, it's about abstraction. It's about working with abstraction, which is why it's such a fundamental, you know, source of, if you're dealing with communicating with each other and you're learning how to communicate with other people, like-minded, whatever, in whatever field, but music ends up being a way that you can demonstrate it because you're manipulating sound.
It's a really a delight to hear these stories and to get in touch with the work you're doing. Our guest has been Hayes Greenfield. He's the founder of Jazzmatazz, which is a nonprofit organization, or a budding nonprofit organization. I'm going to ask you a little bit more about that in a moment, that is educating students in a completely original and unique way about how to express themselves more creatively and get in touch with all those things. And by the way, for our small business audience out there, I'm sure Hayes is also available to work with you as well, or employees in your companies, in terms of getting more in touch with innovation and creativity. The website, www.jazzmatazz, so it's jazzmatazz.com. And you're in the process of putting together the nonprofit piece of this. If folks are interested in actually making a contribution or supporting the work you're doing, how would they approach you?
Oh, they could call me. I have 501c3s in the process of being set up. I have a fiscal sponsor right now in the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Jazzmatazz Foundation, Inc.
Okay, good. And that phone number would be?
212-477-5260.
That's for Hayes Greenfield. For more information, and also for bookings as well, right, Hayes?
Absolutely.
And in fact, it is a metaphor for organizations and how they work together.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's great stuff. Hayes, thanks so much for joining us on the program. Continued success, and great to hear about the work you're doing.
David, thank you very much for having me.
You've been listening to Small Biz Spotlight, up-close interviews with small business leaders and entrepreneurs across America. For more information about our guests or to subscribe, visit smallbizamerica.com.
Small Biz America.